Welcome to the Empowerment Zone with Ramona Houston, where we zone in on Black and Brown relations and our journey to empowering our communities.
It's all about building wealth. With wealth comes power, and that's what we're about here at the Empowerment Zone. Welcome to the Empowerment Zone podcast. I am your host, Ramona Houston, and I am so happy to have Brian Jennings back with us. He's all about economics and building wealth in the Black community, specifically the Black and Brown community generally. Today, Brian is going to talk to us about Black economics. Does Dave Ramsey's financial plan really work for us? And as you know, all of you Empowerment Zone listeners know, Brian is our expert in our money expert, and he's joining us quite often on this podcast. This is actually his second time being with us, but we expect him to be a regular from now on because we've got to build wealth in our communities. So just to tell you a little bit about Brian, he is the owner of Next Generation Payroll, which is a Black-owned payroll company that is based out in Dallas, Texas. Brian is originally from Denver, but now he's a Texan, so he joins us Texans. As you all know, I'm a native Texan from Brownwood, Texas, so it's glad to see him as a fellow Texan now. He's an HBCU graduate of Prairie View A&M, but in Texas, it's Prairie View.
That's right.
And anyway, just to tell you a little bit about his company, he provides more than just payroll. It's about putting businesses in a better economic situation so they can focus on strategies to promote their economic growth and generational wealth building. At Next Generation Payroll, they promote operational excellence with payroll and HR services, risk management strategies to reduce chance of setbacks and failures, and they help businesses implement a marketing strategy to compete with Fortune 500 companies for market penetrations. Welcome, Brian.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me back. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited about having you as a regular. You know, we've got to do a lot of financial literacy in education in our community. And I have you and I have some other guests that are on talking about financial literacy. So the more we have of you on, the better. As you know, economics is one of the foundations, one of the pillars of building power in any community. And we have been misinformed. We've been miseducated. Many of us have certain ideas about money that we need to get rid of. Plus, we have new ideas about money that we need to learn. So the more people we have with various perspectives that can educate our communities, the better.
Absolutely. I'm all for that. I'm all for making sure that we continue to move forward as a people.
So today you're going to talk about Black economics. Does Dave Ramsey's financial plan really work for us? And as you know, here on the Empowerment Zone, we're speaking specifically to and engaging specifically the African-American and Latino community. So I want to widen your aspect a little bit and talk about Black and Brown economics, if you will. So tell us about Dave Ramsey's financial plan and who Dave Ramsey is. Give us a little background for those of us who are not familiar with his work.
Sure. So Dave Ramsey is a financial analyst, businessman, and he's also into insurance as well, promoting life insurance and helping people to get out of debt, and have financial freedom is, you know, his claim to fame. He's on the radio, very popular in Black and Brown communities as well. Also endorsed by, I believe it was Primerica. So Primerica adopts some of the same belief systems as Dave Ramsey. So he has a seven-step plan for getting out of debt. I'll go through them really quick, just the steps, which is in their baby steps, what it's called. But number one is save money. At least save $1,000 is step one. Step two is pay off all your debts. Step three, save 3 to 6 months worth of expenses. Number four, invest 15% of your income into retirement. Number five, save for your child's education fund. Six, pay off your home early. Number seven, build wealth and give, which are the seven steps. At face value, it's a great plan. But when you look at economics, when you look at the bigger picture and see what's going on in America, it's particularly in minority communities, it doesn't work. Oversimplified plan.
Okay, before you get off into why it doesn't work, those are steps that I would say all of us have been taught, right? That all of those things are what we should be doing. And most of us are trying to do those things if we can, right? And so you're saying that that's not necessarily the best thing? I mean, I'm listening to the seven steps and I'm wondering, I can't wait to hear your argument of why they might not be the best thing for us. But I know that those are the basics that we've been taught growing up in terms of financial wealth building.
So this is a micromanagement plan, which is you look at your own income, look at your own household, manage your money well. But when you look at macroeconomics and you look at the bigger picture of how our economy works, how do people amass wealth in the United States? It does not work at all. This isn't a plan to build wealth. It sounds like it, but it's misleading, and it doesn't lead to what we call financial freedom, and it doesn't lead to what we call building equity, which we lack in our community.
Okay, so now before you go there, before you go to, because I want you to explain what equity is, I want you to talk about the macro level economics. What is this plan? What do you think this is? These six or seven steps, how would you label them?
So what I would say is that what these steps are going to allow you to do is get to a point where you can work for someone else, which again, a lot of us do work for someone else. You can get to retirement in theory, and then in retirement, you can enjoy your retirement, and then you leave your house to someone, right? So what happens at the end of the plan is you start spending down your wealth. You start divesting. You start losing value over time. And then too, there's a couple of, in the ideal world, this would work great, but when life happens, this plan falls apart.
Okay, got it. So this is a six or seven steps. What is it?
Seven steps.
Okay, this seven step plan is good for people in terms of having some type of stability, some level of stability, but it has nothing to do with building wealth. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly, because what you've actually built in terms of wealth, you're going to spend in retirement.
Yeah, so you can't really have intergenerational wealth with that particular plan. Is that what you're saying?
It doesn't talk anything about it.
Okay,
exactly.
Great.
It does not talk about generational wealth, which is what we miss in minority communities, Black and Brown communities.
We
don't get those things.
Okay, so I want to clarify that because I want people to have a label or understanding of what those seven steps do, because I don't want to us to think that those seven steps aren't good. They're good for you to have some type of stability. But like you said, if life happens, you don't have much to work with on that program. You know, what we want to do is build equity and build intergenerational generational wealth. So can you talk, go ahead. It looks like you have something you want to add to that.
Well, before we get to talking about generational wealth and passing on wealth to future generations, we have to talk about first where you are, where we are as a culture. So if you take a step back before you implement this plan and say, what do we need to do different to better our situation as general Americans? You want to talk about minorities, we're a few steps back. So how do we put ourselves in better position? First, you have to know where we are, right? And let me go lay some information on you, and then we can jump into how do we actually make a change, right?
Okay.
So first off, just the term financial literacy, when it comes to minority communities, we always talk about better managing what you have. Live below your means, and that's overly simplified. It just is, because part of the problem is that we as Americans don't earn enough money to actually even do this plan that's here. That's one of the problems. That's one of the bigger economic problems. Wages have not gone up. Wages are stagnant. We've had 0.4% growth a year in the middle class since the 1970s until 2015. Mm-hmm. So that's not much. When you talk about wealthy people since the 70s, we've got 0.4% growth. Wealthy people over the same period have grown their wealth by 100%, 120%, 130%. So let's look at it this way. The last economic downturn we had was 2009, last recession. Since then, we've had 11 consecutive years of economic growth. At the same time, we've had an additional $2.3 trillion in consumer debt be added. Okay, so that's 19% growth of consumer debt from 19% growth rate from 2009 until now. So that's $14 trillion of debt that has been added to consumers. Okay, so mortgage debt is at all time high, like $9 trillion, which may not be too terribly bad because you're putting that toward equity. We've had auto loans go up to $1.3 trillion. Student loan debt is at $1.4 trillion. Consumer credit card debt is $829 billion. Retail credit card debt has risen to $90 billion. Personal loans, $300 billion. Those are all increasing during the same time period. So how is it that our country is becoming wealthier, but then our debt is still going up? That means that there's two segments really going on in our economy. There's people that are participating in the growth, and there are people that are actually going the other way. When you talk about African American community, we are actually going the opposite direction. By 2053, we're expected to have a net worth within the Black community of $0. So how is it we can have this economic plan and we're growing, but yet still our wealth is going in a different direction? If this plan is helping us, which it is not, I mean, I'm talking about us as a minority group, if it's actually helping us, we would be going forward, and we're not. So there's a lot of problems that are going on in our economy. So basically, we're not participating in the economic growth of our economy. The middle class in general has not, because again, the growth is 0.4% from the 70s, right? So corporations are getting that money for sure. They're just not sharing it with the American worker.
So go ahead.
Okay, so I'll just say this other point is that we're always taught to go get a job and work, go get your education, but that actually isn't helping us. Stay below your means and live within what you can maintain in your household. But where does that really get us, right? It doesn't teach us to think outside the box and say, hey, you know what? I'm going to go build my own wealth for my own household. This plan does not talk about that at all. This plan does not talk about how Black and brown people need to invest in Black and brown businesses for the benefit of the American middle class. It talks nothing about that. What this simply is a plan that is, I would say, pressed upon us, or we're bamboozled, or we're misinformed of what we should be really doing. That's what this plan does.
Great. Thank you for giving us that background and putting it in context in terms of the black and brown economy versus macro economy. So for our audience, can you explain what equity is? And then just define that for our audience so that we'll all know. We can't make any assumptions. We want to do as much as we can to educate our community what equity is, how you build equity, and why you need equity. And then can you go off into the strategies of what you suggest our communities do to build wealth?
Sure, absolutely. So first, defining equity is ownership. Think of it as owning a share within a company. You say you go buy some stock of Netflix, that's $150. So, hey, you bought a share and now you have a piece of ownership of that company. So what that means for you is that you now get to partake and the revenue that is generated from that company operating. But think of it as, hey, I loaned you $150. So now, since I loaned you that money, I'm entitled to get something back for my investment in your company. I own your company, small share, but I do have a say in the direction of your company. I do have a say, and I have a seat at the table. So because I have a seat, you need to pay me because of my investment. Right. So equity is just really ownership. Right. So when you look at the plan, I think I'll skip down to just, well, actually step two in the plan. Right. Which is pay off all your debt. Right. Paying off your debt sounds good. But when you do that, you miss out on the opportunity to grow your wealth when you're very aggressive in terms of paying down your debt, right? So in the plan, it talks about paying off your home early, talks about paying off consumer debt, it talks about paying off student loans, right? I think I talked about this in the last segment a little bit where someone talks about, hey, I just paid off $50,000 of student loan debt in 2 years or 3 years. Not smart at all to do that, because what we have to stop doing is paying off debt and believing that, okay, I feel good, I'm free, and focus on investing your money. Aggressively paying on debt doesn't help you. It helps a financial institution to get their money back that you borrow from them to go reinvest. We, Black and brown people, have to start investing in real estate. We have to start investing in other companies and getting together as a group to invest, right? So what we do in our household, we're actually in oil and gas. We got that opportunity to do that. So we jumped in with another pool of investors, and now we're in oil and gas. That money that we put in is going to pay us back within 8 months to a year. We're going to get our investment back. And for the next foreseeable future, 8 to 15 years, we're going to continue to reap the benefits of our investment. So it's not the debt that we need to focus on. It's about making your money work for you.
Okay, so to be explicit, what would you suggest that people do with their debt? If not pay it off aggressively, you're saying, how should you pay off debt? I'm asking you, how should you pay off debt and invest at the same time? Give us an example. You have okay. $10,000 debt in credit cards, and you want to aggressively pay it off. So you start putting in your payment. It's supposed to be $100, but you decide you want to pay $200 a month until you get it paid off. Or $500. You're suggesting something else. So what are you saying you do with the credit card debt and build wealth at the same time? I want you to give our audience some ideas.
Sure. So first off, I cringe when you say the credit card debt, like $10,000 in credit card debt. Because for one, what did you put on that, on the credit card? What was that? If it was something you don't need? I mean, is that a vacation that you're putting on? Is that clothes?
Well, you just said that we've accumulated more debt. So, in terms of consumer debt, not just cars and mortgages. So if you're in that situation, my question, and mind you, to my audience, we're not professional financial advisors. We're just talking this out on what we've been taught, okay, and challenging some of those ideas. So I'm asking you, what would you do?
So, well, one, not get into the credit card debt that deep, for one. Mm-hmm. And what's your value system? What are you valuing that you're going to charge up to 10 grand? Exactly. Mm-hmm. In the first place, because, and again, in America, we've only make up 5% of the world's population, right? Mm-hmm. 5%. Okay. So we consume a third of the world's paper supply, making up only 5%. That's right here in the USA. We use 25% of the world's oil right here in the USA. So we spend 50 times the amount on consumer goods and services as someone in China, 50 times that amount. The problem is we have this desire for more. We make more money, live below your means. Okay, if you make more money, then you spend more. That's a part of the problem. We don't necessarily save as much as what we should be doing. First off, right? And that starts at a very young age. Let's just talk about children, for example, if I may. Okay. So let's, in our community, I grew up with this where, oh, you ain't grown. You think you grown? You ain't no adult. You my kid. You know, I brought you in this world. I can take you out. Mm-hmm. We hear that a lot. But the second that you graduate from high school, oh, you grown now. Mm-hmm. You grow now. So all of a sudden, a light switch clicks and you're out on your own. We can't do that to our children. For one, we have to keep our kids at home. So if you graduate from high school and you're going to go into the workforce, well, prepare. Think of your early education years. Make sure that you're preparing yourself to hit the ground running. So if you're in high school, you need to think about entrepreneurship. If you're not going to do anything else, maybe go into real estate. I know a couple of people that out of high school, they jump right into real estate. That's great. But you have to think about a trade or a skill or what business you are going to be developing. So if you're in high school, you'd be developing a business plan that you can launch after graduation that is going to help you. Right. Or if you go work for someone, still stay at home. Parents, keep your kids at home and allow them not to pay rent for several years, for one. So that's $600 a month that you have to save that you would be putting on rent per month. Do that for a couple years. Maybe you have $14,000 after 2 years of saved money. Then right off the jump, you can go and take that money and go invest it somewhere in some business and say, hey, I'll give you this money for a percentage of your business ownership. So you turn into a Shark Tank right off the bat. If you, right, forget the show, go ahead and start doing that now, right? Mm-hmm. If you go to college, that's awesome as well. I went to college as well, so I'm not going to not doing it. So that was my ticket to learn what I do know now and how to apply myself. When you go off to college, you have to think about how I'm going to use this skill to benefit me. We're always told, and one of Dave Ramsey's guys that works with him is like Anthony O'Neill, talks about the best way to pay off your student loan debt so you can land this dream job. Stop talking about this whole dream job thing. I mean, it's not for everybody. How about you go build your dream company? How about that? Mm-hmm. Build something, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Invest in a small business. So if you're in college, go back home, stay at home, right? I wish I would have known this. I would have gotten to real estate right after college, or I would have taught for maybe 4 or 5 years so that my student loan debt that I amassed, I could get that paid off by working in a economically disadvantaged community or something like that. So it's a good way to help pay off your debt if you go into college student loan debt. Most 75% of us, Black and brown, that go into college are going to go in with a lot of debt as opposed to, you know, our Caucasian counterparts. They're about 50%. So they don't borrow as much money. And it is a vehicle for us to better ourselves. But again, after college, stay at home. Stay at home for 2 years, 3 years. You can save about $7,000 a year not paying rent. And as our people, we need to reinforce that. So it's like, all right, so after 2-3 years, we need to go ahead and invest that money into something that's going to build more money. It's not, oh, let me invest and get the student loans out of the way. No, that hurts us. We can't do those things. Okay.
That's a great idea. I have not heard that until you about staying at home for the first couple of years, 2 or 3 years out of high school or college, depending on what you decide as your professional trajectory. But to stay at home 2 to 3 years and build, you know, build that income so that you can invest. You can invest in the market. You can invest in a business, as you stated, and you can invest in buying your first condo, right? And then using that condo to invest in a home later and keeping that as an investment property. There's so many ways you can use that 2 or 3 years to benefit you personally and professionally so that you're building equity, to your point, versus going right off and giving your money in apartment rent.
Absolutely. And once you are aware of what your opportunities are, you will never buy into a plan such as this to say, I'm gonna accelerate my debt. I'm just gonna pay everything off. Yeah, right. Get real. Because like I said, the investment that I just made is fantastic. Right. And it's going to pay me. So then in the future, the things that you do want in life that you put on your credit card, $10,000, $15,000, if that's all consumer debt, you can now, when you have an investment that's bringing you cash flow, you can use the return on your investment for the things that you want. We need to focus on the delayed gratification. Mm-hmm. Then start getting the things that you want. So mm-hmm. I'm 36, mm-hmm. right? And I told myself, I said, hey, in my 40s.
You gonna ball out?
I'm gonna be living life in my 40s. But in my 20s and in my 30s, I'm really grinding. But uh-huh. I'm living life pretty soon here. So, but I had to get the foundation together first before I do that. And just a segue, step three on this plan was save 3 to 6 months of expenses, which is good, but mm-hmm. you cannot stop there. You cannot just, oh, I'm going to save 3 months or 6 months. Oh, I'm mm-hmm. good if something mm-hmm. bad happens. Mm-hmm. No. One thing that Dave Ramsey does talk about is getting disability insurance. Yes, get it. If you have a business now, get it. Business overhead expense is a disability policy. If you can't work, it is going to pay for all of your overhead expenses. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. If you're working for someone else, you can't. The reason why people go into debt, like 50% of it or more, is related to mm-hmm. medical costs. Mm-hmm. It's not so much the medical cost, because a lot of people have health insurance. I mean, there's some that don't. But But the reason why the medical debt kills people is because you no longer can work and you can no longer replace your income. So that's where the disability insurance really helps people. So again, I wish some of these things that I know now, I wish I would have known back then, right out of college. This is against what Dave Ramsey believes, but I would have bought immediately in my 20s, I would have bought a permanent life insurance policy on my parents. Absolutely. As a parent, I have permanent life insurance. I have it on my kids. I have it on myself. I have it on my wife, right? So this is a gift. As a parent, you need to buy permanent life insurance on yourself to gift to your children so that when your children come of age and they reach retirement, more than likely at that 65 age, your parents are going to be out the door, or they already are, you know, bless someone's heart, you know, that's them. But when your parents leave, you need to pass on a legacy, right? So when you die, it's not just your house that you're giving away. When you die, you're handing a tax-free check to someone else. Dave Ramsey doesn't believe in whole life. He doesn't talk about that. But as a investment advisor, you know, in the past, and insurance advisor as well, insurance agent, wealthy people bought permanent life insurance. And as Black people, brown people, you need permanent life insurance. Dave Ramsey will say, oh, just get term for 30 years. And then after 30 years, you should have enough wealth accumulated. Great. In the perfect world, yeah, that does work. But I've seen it happen in my own family. Grandparent dies. They don't have a life insurance policy in place because they just got term. What happens is that the family takes money out of their pocket, out of their children's pocket, out of their grandchildren's pocket to bury a parent. Right. As opposed to, you know, I was talking with my relatives. I said, man, it would have been nice if my grandma, when she passed away, gave me $5,000, which isn't a lot of money in a life insurance policy. That'd be great, because if between me and a few cousins got $5,000, we can all start businesses. So there's a lot of things that is just so fundamentally wrong with this plan that we can just continue to pursue. What you got next for me? What questions you got?
Yeah, so in looking at those seven steps and challenging those seven steps, what are you suggesting that the plan should be moving forward for Black and brown communities? Just taking our money and what would you suggest in terms of building generational wealth in terms of a plan?
Absolutely. So this term of empowerment, how do I put this? So the shift on what you put your money toward just needs to change. So business ownership, entrepreneurship needs to increase within our community.
Instead of working for somebody.
Absolutely. That definitely has to change in order for us to have the trajectory where our wealth doesn't go down to zero. We have to have our own businesses and build a stronger microeconomy. So the narrative of working for someone, again, that's always going to be there. You're always going to have a team of people to run a business, right? Everyone's not going to be a business owner or aspire to. But however, if you are tired of working for someone else and you're sick of the rat race, you need to go into entrepreneurship. And as a whole, that benefits the middle class as a whole. Because when I talked about in the 70s, when we have the stagnation of wages in America, that started because of the collapse of the labor unions, right? So when labor unions no longer had the power to bargain with employers, that's when you start seeing these splits between the CEO of a company and the entry level employee.
Yep.
Right. So you just have this big divide between what these people make.
I think they're making like 40 times it was 40 times.
In the 70s, it was 40 times. In the 70s. Mm. Now it's 200 times, 300 times the amount. So an entry-level worker, it takes them 200 years to make the same thing as what a CEO makes in 1 year. And if that is the case, America, it's time to wake up. These companies that are doing that are the companies that we go shop at every single day. Mm. You know, the Walmarts. It is the Starbucks, you know, Home Depot, Lowe's. So what they're doing is investing in stock, you know, corporate buybacks. What they're doing is they're giving their executives stock options as a form of wage. And America just has to stop putting money in those businesses and put them in the small business.
Right? Because you're saying that contributing to small business will contribute to the whole growth of the middle class and
absolutely.
Go ahead.
No, and the other problem is wage suppression. You can't continue to support Walmart and McDonald's. Like, why would I go buy a cheeseburger from McDonald's when I know you're only going to pay people bare minimum wage? Like, why would you support that? You just go get a cheeseburger from somewhere else where they actually appreciate their employees. Like, I think, for example, In-N-Out Burger, I think, you know, and they've raised their minimum wage to a certain level. Okay, it's okay to support In-N-Out Burger because they actually believe in investing in their employees. We can't continue to do that.
So we just need to become more conscious consumers on how we spend our money, because how we spend our money will contribute also to the growth of the economic growth of the wider community.
Exactly. And then too, on the consumer spending, I mean, we have to refocus on what our priorities are, mm-hmm. and what is it like living life? Like, what does it truly mean to live life? Is that vacations every 3 months? You're spending $3,000-$4,000. I mean, for what? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, is it the diamonds and the watches and, you know, necklaces? Is it the exotic house? It's a really nice exotic foreign car that, you know, comes with a high maintenance bill, whatnot. You know, we're investing in those things too early. And I'm not going to say, I'm not saying this completely go against it, but it's the right timing. Don't do that early. Own something first, then enjoy your wealth.
That sounds good. Well, that's a great, great place to end this conversation today. We really evaluated Dave Ramsey's financial plan, and you challenged various aspects of it. And so can't wait for the next conversation. I don't know what your topic is going to be, but I'm glad that you went over some of these ideas, because I know I've been taught those ideas, those seven ideas, as a child and as an adult. And you've given us some alternative strategies in terms of building wealth and not just not being able to pass down wealth to other generations. When we leave, our money leaves, and it should not be that way.
Absolutely. And you're absolutely right. And I think in a future conversation, we can get into a little bit more about how the 401k, you know, isn't necessarily the end all be all. And you can get in trouble there with a 401k and did all the right steps up until the age of 65, we retire. And, you know, we could talk a little bit more about, you know, not paying off your house, accelerate as well. And, you know, just explore some more alternatives on what we can be doing to change our mindset within our community. So I'm excited about having the opportunity to do that as well.
Okay, well, we look forward to having you next month again. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Brian Jennings, and he's all about building wealth and building the economics of the Black and Brown communities. Thank you so much, Brian.
Thank you.
A special thank you to the incredible team of the Empowerment Zone. Terry Ungully, theme song, NADWORKS, digital support, and of course, our featured guest.
If you enjoyed my podcast, please subscribe. We are on all of your favorite podcast platforms. Be sure to rate us on Apple Podcasts too. Thank you for your continued support.